You've got to be careful taking Viagra. It'll really affect your penis.
Do we think there is going to be any father-son sharing action going on?
A Sicilian finger trap. I would say it's slightly unfair there because Albie's got a ringer there. I mean, she's a professional.
That's true.
Her work may be pro bono, but she's still a professional.
That's an interesting route for me to go down, as it were.
Star fishing.
This podcast was recorded remotely
and may contain adult language and themes.
Hello and welcome to TV DNA, The White Lotus, Season 2, Episode 4, In the Sandbox. My name is Adam Hemming, and she's like the heroine in her own Italian opera. It's Grace Chapman.
Nous regardons la télévision.
And he certainly knows how to have fun in the sandbox. It's Damien Cooper.
Call the priest! Call the priest!
Another stunning White Lotus episode. First thoughts from you guys?
I, again, loved it, and particularly enjoying how all of the storylines are starting to really, the network and the web is starting to really come together. Brilliant stuff.
I really, really enjoyed a lot of this. I wasn't able to watch it in like one sitting. I had to catch 5-10 minutes here or there. So that did kind of ruin the flow of it for me. I'm really enjoying all the Tanya stuff, the Portia and Albie stuff. I am incredibly frustrated by the Harper and Ethan stuff, but my God, is it well acted?
It's so well acted, all of it. I mean, we got to see more of Tom Hollander in this episode, and I was very impressed by his work in this as well. I thought he was fantastic. Definitely some laugh out loud moments for me, but where should we start this time around?
I feel like maybe this time we should start with Tanya and Portia.
Yeah, that sounds good. They were more featured in this episode, as were Mia and Lucia, I think. We got much more of them in this episode. But let's start with Tanya and Portia and co, because this does introduce our new characters as well. So we first see them at breakfast. We get a nice shot of some cannolis. What did I say?
No, that's right. There were cannolis. I'm just laughing about this episode.
I feel like I've missed what I said and you both sniggered at it. No, it doesn't matter. Just paranoid.
That's the Molly.
I hope I haven't got my pills mixed up.
That's a problem. You've got to be careful taking Viagra. It'll really affect your penis.
Well, I don't get it.
You're a pianist.
Oh, pianist.
Oh, my God. Albie and Portia. We start with them, don't we? And Portia's feeling a little bit guilty for not hanging out with him. She says, let's hang out. If I can get out of the babysitting, which has been a lot. Yeah. And then she goes and asks Tanya for permission, right? He's nice, smart, and not non-binary.
I know. I loved that sentence. I feel like I was wondering what had caused this sort of change of heart in Portia. And I honestly think it's probably just spending time with Tanya. I mean, that'll do it, won't it? This is a woman who's chased emotionally unavailable men her whole life. I think Portia's probably starting to think, I just don't want to end up like that. She's very self-aware, isn't she, Portia?
Yeah, absolutely. What was funny for me, I think, in this bit was the soundscape kind of behind Tanya's reaction. Portia's asking her about what, you know, if it's okay, spend some time with Albie. And all Tanya hears are rumbling clouds. And then this whine comes in. And then she starts talking about Greg. It's clear like she hasn't paid a single bit of attention to what Portia's been saying.
Yeah, we're getting more and more of those sort of surreal moments, aren't we, that kind of creep in. And that was definitely one for Tanya. I think a really important line from Portia in this scene is, I feel like if I won the lottery, I'd throw away the tickets. And I think, obviously, we saw that come true later on.
Yeah. Then they meet Tom Hollander's character. And correct me if I'm wrong, do you know what his character's name is? Did he say it at all once in the episode?
He didn't. But thanks to the joy of subtitles, I believe his name is Quentin.
But isn't it interesting that he didn't say his name and no one said his name? That's got to be a choice, right? Maybe there's this thing of like, this man evades people knowing who he really is.
Yeah. Is this something I was going to talk about later on? And maybe I'll put a button in it until we think. But I think he might be a grifter.
A grifter?
Yeah, that's not a homophobic slur. A grifter is someone who's a con man.
My older brother's first bike was called a grifter, I think.
I thought you were going to say my older brother was a grifter. which would have been a much better story, I have to say.
One of the things I love most about this episode was Tanya's fascination and excitement of people from different parts of Europe. And I love that she had to ask him if he was English. He couldn't have been any more English if he tried, but still, she had to confirm.
Well, this is mirrored later on by Jack saying to Portia, so you're American, right? Like, almost he had to check as well, which kind of put him on the same intelligence level as Tanya, I thought.
I think it's interesting that the first thing that Quentin says to Tanya is, oh, so she. And we know all Tanya wants is to be chic and happy. Now, was he given that little bit of information?
Maybe so, yeah. I mean, again, the line I introduced you with about her being, you know, the heroine of her own Italian opera, which comes later on, all buttering her up in the same way. He says all the women around here dress like they're at a funeral. Again, more death references here, so many of these. But he invites them to come to the beach club, and we learn that he lives in Palermo and he's got a boat, and he's got a mate called Matteo who has some tash on him. I think his budgie smugglers are almost as impressive as his tash, again, later on in the episode. But I quite liked Matteo and his flirtatious ways. But Tanya tells Portia, those guys are nice. Clearly they're not.
There's that moment as they walk onto the sand and the guy, in the most horrendous, like, gravelly voice, shouts something at them in Italian. And she turns around and says something like, that's the weirdest voice I've ever heard.
It was totally random and surreal, this guy. I think he was just a host, wasn't he, for the beach club? So I think he was just saying welcome to this part of the resort.
It was almost as random as surreal as Portia's knitted sleeves. Now, I don't know what purpose they had, but I was here for it.
Yeah, I'm growing to love Portia's style. I think, you know, it is a competition between Cam, Portia and Harper, right, for who's the most stylish.
Yeah, would you say her style is like new grunge? I feel like that's kind of her vibe. It's like a 2020s twist on the 90s grunge gear. Some absolutely fantastic pieces in there.
Maybe new beach grunge.
Nice. Smart casual, new grunge beachwear.
Available at
Pancrazzi, isn't it?
So Quentin orders two bottles of rosé wine and introduces Tanya to Hugo and Didier, our French couple, and also to naughty nephew Jack.
Naughty nephew Jack.
And we get another, you're French. Oh my gosh.
Also, I really loved when Jack meets Portia again and we get a little throwback to the sensitive nips comment when he's like, have you been in the pool? It's not heated.
But the first thing he says to her is, oh, shit, I know you. Let's talk about Jack a bit then. See, he's from Essex. What do we make of Jack?
I've seen him somewhere else described as basically a Love Island contestant.
That's exactly right.
He had some choice lines, which I'm sure we'll get to. So he's been in Palermo for 2 months, and it's all right if you don't mind a load of gays grabbing your ass and copping a feel. Which he doesn't.
They're just very strong.
The only women he meets at Quentin's villa are old ladies, and he didn't come to Sicily to have tea with old ladies. And Portia says her experience has been soul-crushing.
Yeah, pretty brutal from Portia there, but it is true. Also, I know how to have fun in a sandbox. Is this a phrase that anyone else has heard before?
No.
It sounds like the kind of thing that'd give you worms.
I mean, I took it to mean a sexual thing.
I mean, yeah, I think so. But then as soon as he said it, I just started thinking about making sandcastles.
I wonder if it means just like a small controlled area. You kind of don't have the full freedom of Sicily or whatever. There's just one particular defined area that he has been in. Even if he finds himself in that, he knows where to find fun with very few options to find it, I believe is what that means.
Yeah, I think that's a good explanation. Well done. We then learn about Isola Bella, which is the island just across the way. We learn that there was a wealthy Swedish family who owned it and an old matriarch who wouldn't sell to investors, so was killed.
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting that he gives her, and I'm going to try some Italian here, so bear with me. Let's see if you can translate it, gang, because Google Translate did it for me. Una piccola storia di fantasmi siciliani.
A little fantastic Sicilian story.
Oh, nearly. A little Sicilian ghost story. Molto bene. Molto bene. there's so much in amongst all that. There's so many slights that Quentin puts in. So he's like, so you're just here with your assistant, right? There's all these little lines and just, if he manages to get her on that island, she's a goner, right?
Yeah. I love that this was the third story time with the White Lotus that we've had, isn't it? In each, almost every episode, we've had a little story time. So the first one was about, I think, the woman who deballed her husband. I could be wrong. Yeah, I think we got some nodding heads. Second is obviously about the elephants who were kicked out of the pod. And then this one. And I just love how these sort of myths and stories and kind of, they really just shape our suspicions so well. And I just think it's very unique to the White Lotus, that, I think.
Yeah, it's really clever stuff. Quentin wants to know more about Tanya.
Yeah, sorry. The other important thing about the ghost story that's interesting is he tells his whole story. She goes, oh, my goodness. And he says, well, but at least the house is now open to the public, so that's good. And I was thinking, like, is he saying, like, well, you know, at least when you die, your money will go to someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, lovely. Really lovely. I did wonder whether he'd been involved in the whole murder of the old matriarch, whether that was, you know, he's telling the story from personal experience or not. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe it's too old a story.
That's our first kind of, I'd say explicit reference to the modern day mafia, Cosa Nostra. We've had this kind of weird Hollywood Godfather, as you know, Adam, the Godfather. But we've now got relatively modern day mafia being introduced subtly. Are we going to see more of that?
Almost. Again, it would be brilliant if it was so subtle that it was never really explicit that that was what was going on. Do you know what I mean? I think that would be really, really interesting way to go. But yeah, Quentin wants to know everything from the beginning about Tanya and her husband. And she starts with, I was born in San Francisco. And he's like, oh, from the very beginning. And this was the point where I was like, yes, Tom Hollander is nailing this. He's brilliant.
I've already made a note that if anyone asks me to tell them something from the very beginning, I'm gonna start from the very beginning.
It was great. I was worried he was going to start asking for the road she grew up on, her mother's maiden name, name of her first pet. I thought, what level of grifting is going on here?
We'll come back to Tanya and Quentin in a bit, but Portia and Jack are getting on like a house on fire. I mean, Albie has shown up. He's down below and he's spotted them. So he knows that they are, that she's up there and he's kind of just waiting for her to come back down. But they're talking about Palermo and Jack's talking about how they party, fight and fuck in the streets and that the villa that Quentin has is the tits.
Yeah, I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth, Adam. I was just thinking about all of the words that he uses in just a few sentences. So like you say, it was fuck, wild, party, fight and tits. And I think that language is so highly charged in every, and he obviously knows it. So it's just so clever, that writing. And I know that we were in two minds about Albie and we're not sure how we feel about him, but oh, I did feel for him a little bit here.
Yeah, big time. There he is. They're looking up at the balcony at his love, right? Some big Romeo and Juliet vibes there. Could that be a signal to our star-crossed lovers being two of the bodies? I wonder.
Nice.
There's signs everywhere. He gathers up enough balls to get up to the balcony and just to point out that he has saved her a seat. It's the last one. And is she going to join him? She says she'll come and find him, but she needs to stay with Portia for a little bit longer. And then Dom and Bert show up, like the proverbial bad pennies that they are, and tell Albie they found a table for lunch.
Yeah, she threw a lottery ticket away in that moment.
Has she, though? I don't know. Oh, I don't know.
She's definitely happy with adventurous Jack, more so than controlling Albie, I think, or non-aggressive Albie. Tanya, again, is having finished her story. Quentin's still awake and they have a conversation about whether she's made bad decisions or just had bad luck. This really resonated with me and I was like, was this a conversation that was had in the first season of The White Lotus with somebody else? I feel like it was, but I couldn't place it completely. I'm sure it's a conversation that's been had in many different stories.
My question is, how much bad luck can you have when you have over $500 million in the grand scheme of things?
But that money was hers because of a horrendous father. which we learned, right? So that's pretty bad luck.
Yeah, I mean, any sympathy is qualified. But again, I loved her reaction to being called the heroine of the Italian opera. The question, does that mean I'm doomed? And again, he's like, well, you know, maybe. The party on the balcony setting up. This is where we get the great shot of Matteo's budgie smugglers and Tanya talking French. All just kind of nice little flavour stuff happening, I think, in between other scenes at this point. Then we get a conversation at dinner between Tanya and Portia, where Tanya says that women are kind of depressing and gay guys are good as friends. Women are drips. It's not their fault.
It's not their fault. They have a lot to be depressed about. Absolutely loved that line.
Yeah, I mean, the sisterhood is not coming across well in this ep. There is a lot of internalised misogyny going on.
There are a lot of women without any female friends in this series, and I think that's quite telling.
Yeah, interesting. Jack turns up and we find out that he's put on fresh underwear for her, not because he shit his pants, just because it's a special occasion. Do you have special occasion underwear?
God, no.
When I heard that line, I thought, special pants, that is definitely a young man's game.
Also, as we saw later, I think those special pants, I think someone's been shopping at the same shop as Cameron.
We get the final, I think the final scene between Tanya and Quentin. She basically thanks him, and he says that his whole life has been one long distraction. And again, it made me wonder whether this is the, you know, the distraction game that he's playing is, look at what my hand's doing over here whilst I stab you in the back or pinch all your money or whatever it is he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, could you get a more grifter line than that? But the other important bit of that is that he invites her to the villa to party, and he says that he'll get her some guy that's hung like a horse. He might even be heterosexual. She says, oh, I can't, I'm married. And he kind of gives this kind of sotto voce, conspiratorial, we won't tell anyone. And it made me think, oh, this feels like some kind of incriminating evidence being set up for the prenup.
I'm fully prepared for the anxiety thermometer to go through the roof when she ends up in that villa. I think it's going to be horrendous.
It's okay, though, because hopefully she'll have that really encouraging gay chorus around her. Loved them at dinner. And he was like, you should come in. And she's like, I can't. They were like, no, do come. It's so good.
Yeah, well, let's finish talking about Jack and Portia then. They end up drinking at the bar. I love Jack's ordering at the bar.
Definitely. He goes for Dos Jägermeister, Dos Red Bull. I mean, great use of the Spanish language. I'm sure they'd have loved that in the bar. Thought, fair play. He's on the Jäger bombs. He wants to get fucked up.
I think he opens with, all right, geese.
Jack really is sort of that arrogance of the young Englishmen abroad, isn't he? The swagger.
So whilst they're having their drinks at the bar, Albie and Lucia, who we'll talk about in a bit, are also having drinks at the bar. And Albie's learning the Italian gesture for I don't care whilst staring at, we're all doing it, whilst staring at Portia. But what surprised me was Portia's reaction to all of that. And she's basically behaving the same way. We should go. And Jack and Lucia are the ones who are sort of making them stay and saying, oh, you want to make him jealous, clearly. So Portia and Jack have a snog. Albie and Lucia then have a snog. And there's this whole jealousy competition going on. And eventually Lucia claims the victory.
Yeah, but I would say it's slightly unfair there, because Albie's got a ringer there. I mean, she's a professional.
That's true.
Her work may be pro bono, but she's still a professional.
Very, very good.
That is, actually. You can have that.
But yeah, the final thing we see in the episode, Portia and Jack are going at it whilst Lucia gives Albie a blowjob. And he asks, is it okay if I come now?
So vulnerable.
Now, I don't know if you want to go into this, but she kind of, after the deed is done, she scampers off to the bathroom with a cheeky smile. And I wasn't initially sure whether she was beckoning him into the bathroom as well for round two, or whether she was looking to maybe arrange herself. The big thing, though, was he then kind of falls back onto the bed, and we see behind him this painting. We've had lots of kind of people reacting to the paintings they see around him. And this painting, I believe, is of Saint Sebastian, because someone chained to a pillar with arrows, which is what happened to Saint Sebastian, who was an early Christian martyr. They tried to kill him with arrows. It didn't work. He was kind of brought back to health by someone, another saint. And he went to Diocletian, I think, to say, you've been sinning. You need to repent on your sins. And then he was definitely killed then. So I think there's an element of kind of getting people to try and do the right thing, which he kind of is doing with his dad.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think I don't know what to make of all of the different... I think we're being teased in so many different directions here. But it's great, great background on that painting.
However many years of going to church has paid off for these things.
Let's move on to someone else then. Who else are we going to talk about? Who's next? Should we go for Mia and Lucia, seeing as we've kind of touched on their story already? Lucia's full of regrets. All whores are punished in the end. She feels like shit. And I wonder whether Val is getting to her, because as they leave Cam and Ethan's room, Val sees them and says something like, you look like a couple of roses. So gives a bit of a dig to them. Feels like Lucia's a bit fed up of being looked down upon.
Yeah, I mean, they were a far cry from the original time they emerged from the sort of White Lotus shop, you know, with Dom's card a few episodes ago. They were sort of dragging their suitcases down the hall barefoot. I think they probably feel like they have fallen down the peg. Shouldn't say peg.
Fallen down the pecking order.
I prefer falling down the pegging order.
That's what I said.
Well, that's the episode title covered. Nice one, Grace.
Fallen down the pecking order. Damn it. You know what I'm talking about. Or maybe you don't.
They're on a big come down as well, aren't they? Let's not forget. There's a lot of big come down energy happening with their early scenes. And although Mia seems to be quite inspired, and she thinks that having sex when you know what you're getting out of it isn't that bad, obviously referencing Giuseppe.
Yeah, I think what's also interesting in this scene, because as we say, sisterhood doesn't get much of a good rap this episode, but I do think what we see in Mia and Lucia's relationship, although I think is maybe a more naive friendship at points, I mean, there is an element there of them looking out for each other, but they're kind of just slightly more focused on their own endeavours, and that's where it kind of all goes wrong.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is definitely a protective element between them. And I have to say, I really loved spending more time with them this episode. I think some of their moments were some of the best of the episode. So that was really great. And I love how Mia decides to have sex, and she just keeps calling him the piano player.
They see Bert going out with Albie and decide, or with Dom, I can't remember who now, and they decide, anyway, they just decide they're going to have a shower in Bert's room because they've still got his key. And then later on, Lucia's ready, but Mia's not. As Albie and Bert return, Albie wants to spend time alone with Portia at the beach club, and then Bert gets an eyeful of Mia and immediately thinks he's in the wrong room. Lovely stuff.
So given we've already talked about the blowjob scene mirroring, in fact, the blowjob we see in the opening titles, does that mean that depending on what happens after that bit of oral pleasure, that Lucia will have been naked in all three of those rooms?
Yeah, possibly. Like father, like son, right?
I was so annoyed about that because I typed that into my notes, like father, like son, so proud. And then Bert said it, and I was like, oh, fuck.
We next see Lucia and Mia at the beach club. Everyone's going to the beach club today. Convenient. They sit next to Albie, and he's like, you can't sit there. That's who's taken. It's the Fast Show, isn't it? They have a sketch. Someone's sitting there.
Grace is too young for the Fast Show. So, Grace, the Fast Show was a comedy sketch show in the 90s.
The thing with the Fast Show was the sketches were sometimes 5 seconds long. They were really, really quick.
Much like Albie.
I did see the Fast Show live, and that was incredible because they were playing all of these characters in different costumes, and I just could not compute how they were changing so quickly.
I did as well. The double bill was Shooting Stars.
Yeah.
What a show. What a show that was.
Lost Where I Am.
Lucia and Mia on the beach.
Yeah. So Lucia says she doesn't want to be a millionaire. She just wants to open a store. And Mia just wants to sing. So maybe she should fuck Giuseppe.
I mean, it all makes complete sense.
And then Lucia reflects that she's created a monster. And there was some quite monstrous behaviour from Mia later on. I mean, when poor old Giuseppe can't keep it up, She's really trying hard. And then she says something like, if you don't help me, I'll kill you later on. So there's definitely a sort of single-mindedness about Mia in this situation. But yeah, the key thing, I guess, with that, following on with Giuseppe and Mia, is that he takes her to the church as nobody goes in there and it's deconsecrated. So, you know, she can't do it looking at a picture of God. And he can't keep up, so she decides to go and get Lucia's Viagra.
Well, let's hope she doesn't make a mistake with those drugs, huh?
No, that would could end really badly. Yeah, I mean, as soon as she thought about it, as soon as she found Lucia's handbag, I just thought, oh my God, I know what else is in that handbag. It was so great. And then her, like, running down to the beach and shouting across the beach, like, which is the Viagra for the piano player?
And the last thing he said was, don't tell anyone, as she left. But yeah, Lucia's gone for a swim with Albie. So she's gone back to sit with Albie. You know, your friend didn't come. She left you all alone. So she's invited Albie down to the beach for effectively a paddle, I guess.
And just before the scene where Lucia comes back to speak to Albie is the moment that we have Quentin saying the thing about bad luck is it can always change. And I loved that cut of being like, that was planted in our minds. And then we see a young man whose, you know, luck has changed in a heartbeat. I just thought that was really a lovely, clever little moment.
Yeah, again, there's some nice music in this sequence as well, as the sort of the music was there's banging and operatic singing going on over the sexy stuff with Mia and Giuseppe.
Yeah, and here we see some calm water. You know, the water is placid. There's no wind, there's no waves. They're just in this kind of little semi-secluded bit of the water. And I think we've maybe not long before that seen an image of water churning up against the side. I can't remember if we talked about this previously, but I believe, sorry for being a nerd here, that the strait between Sicily and the mainland of Italy is famous for being very choppy water, and many a fleet in history has been sunk. Like, it's near impossible to swim it, even if you're a strong swimmer. That is how bad the current is there.
Yeah, I mean, similarly with all of the paintings and all of the eyes, the imagery of the sea throughout the whole show, very, very strong. Something else that was a bit too strong for me was the shot of Giuseppe's bum as he stood up. After she's gone, he just crosses himself and shrugs. She told him not to move and watch porn on his phone, and he stands up with his trousers halfway down his backside and crosses himself.
The other thing that I thought just before she leaves him is when she's kind of given up and she sat down next to him, the difference in size and age. She's so much smaller than him, and she looks so much younger than him. You know, he's kind of like, well, not necessarily spent, obviously, but he's exhausted and she's there kind of frustrated and kind of full of energy, even though she's on a massive come down. And I just then, for me, seeing them side by side like that really accentuated the difference in age between the two of them.
That's such a great shout. And then we get the line, why is it that men have all the power? Just such a lovely sort of the visuals and then the words sort of coming together in just a really small moment. And the more that we watch White Lotus, the more I'm hoping that like a woman goes on a mad male killing spree. Sounds bad, I know. But I feel like there's so much misogyny and there's so much just horrendous sort of, yeah. And I just, yeah, I don't know. I haven't really fully formed that thought.
Yeah, I think it would be a satisfying way for the show to go.
Definitely. Giuseppe's response to that is, we have to be, otherwise pretty girls like you would always get to the front of the line. And then she kind of like in exasperation says, well, I don't feel like I'm at the front of the line.
Yeah. Later on though, the effects of the Molly kick in. We assume that's what it is that he's taken. He's off his tits. She wants to know when he's going to introduce her to these people, and he just fobs her off. And then his singing. There's some lovely comments in the restaurant about the singing being worse than usual. Like, nobody really appreciates his singing, even when it's, you know, not chemically altered. But yeah, the inevitable happens and Giuseppe collapses. I love this moment of Mia's calling for an ambulance. He's asking for a priest. And she's like, no, don't die. You've got to help me with my career. And then Cameron's like, just four for dinner.
Yeah.
The rest of them are all looking around at what's going on. And he's just telling the waitress to get them a table. Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's Cameron's lack of empathy shining through there.
Do you think he's going to be all right, Giuseppe?
I guess, how much does it serve the purpose of the narrative that we see him again? I mean, Mee is already kind of on for his job. Valentina's not having it, but Mee is already angling to take his place at the piano. So I don't know what there is. Maybe there's a seventh episode for him to return and seek his vengeance, but otherwise I'm not sure what purpose he serves.
Yeah. Do you think she will get to be the pianist then?
I don't think so. Well, maybe there's a moment where she might be, and then something's going to happen. I really hope that Mia is like one of the characters that, you know, does fulfill some dreams and have a nice time. But I mean, I've already suggested that she dies in my sweepstakes, so I have a lot of hope for that.
Well, should we move on to another group then? Should we cover Daft Cam and Ethan and Harper?
Yes, please.
I was going to ask if maybe we cover the Italian compatriots, if we deal with Valentina, because I think that's quite a quick one, but quite a nice one.
Yeah, some really lovely stuff in this. And again, well spotted for last week, kind of flirtatiousness that had passed me by, certainly in that short scene in the last episode. But Valentina finds Rocco and Isabella chatting and having a nice conversation, and she quickly sends Rocco away and then checks with Isabella whether Rocco makes her uncomfortable. Men can be a little intrusive and even aggressive. Again, giving us hints to potential issues in Valentina's past, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think hyperly sexually aggressive men on the island have probably scarred her. What I liked was that angling of, do you like Rocco? Do you like men? Is what I got from that, because they're having this really lovely conversation and it's really nice. And then suddenly upturns Dom asking about the jewelers, and she's just like, yeah, there's shops out there, find it yourself. Sorry, do you want me to work? I'm talking to Isabella here, I'm on the chirps, leave us alone. And then Isabella's gives him this lovely suggestion of this beautiful jewelers that she really likes, and Valentina's like, oh, is it any good, is it cute, should I go?
It's a lovely scene, I thought. And I mean, the things, I think it's another, as we've been pulling out, and I've only just realised having from this chat that actually there are quite a few examples of women trying to give advice to other women or protect other women in the White Lotus. Really, really small examples of it. And I fear no one's really taking heed to any of it because they're all sort of living in their own worlds. And then what I loved about the Dom moment is obviously Valentina knows what Dom's really like and Isabella doesn't. So when he's like, I'd like to buy a piece of jewellery for my wife, she's like, I bet you fucking do.
It's just so brilliant the way she's like, no, I'm not recommending a shop. Go down there and find some shops. Superb.
Just a ton of it when he thanks and she goes, prego, which she hasn't even helped him.
So Pancrazzi is the name of the shop, which translates to sports, I believe. I did a little bit of digging into this. From the ancient Greek, all powers, pancration, an ancient Greek martial arts combining aspects of boxing and wrestling.
Okay, what? That sounds just like they've picked a random word and not quite realised what it actually means.
I don't know. I think like sports and games and wrestling, I can see all of those playing a part. But the interesting thing is that Dom comes back from that shop with quite a garish brooch that he's bought for his wife, right? And I'm pretty sure that was difficult to see in the Dom scene. Pretty sure that Val bought Isabella exactly the same starfish brooch. So I'm wondering whether it was on special offer and they're both being cheapskates, but also I'm wondering whether there's going to be some mix up with the brooch at a later point.
Well, don't forget, Mia also got a very big starfish earring when they hit up the shop inside the hotel. So I think one thing we definitely know is that starfish are so hot right now.
Yeah, the lovely moment of them flirting and then Valentina doesn't even notice the ambulance arriving.
Yeah, funny, because she's gone from being a super diligent hotel manager. She is now completely taken her eye off the ball. She's completely smitten with Isabella and she can't focus on her work.
And do we think it's reciprocated or do we think she's barking up the wrong tree? I feel like it might be the latter, but I mean, a brooch, it's quite a gift, right?
Yeah, I wonder if Isabella is just a bit of a Tim nice but dim. So she's just kind of like really nice, really friendly. Maybe she's used to people giving her nice things because of the way she looks and how friendly she is. And so she's kind of like, oh, wow, that's really nice. Thank you so much. Wow, I really respect my boss and my boss is being really nice to me.
Yeah, I can't see it ending happily, basically.
Hello, you lovely listeners. This is Damo from the future here. This is a spoiler warning for season one of The White Lotus. If you haven't watched it yet and you don't want it to be spoiled, please make sure to skip forward about 20 seconds or so. Enjoy.
I think the last time a White Lotus hotel manager started fraternizing with his staff, he ended up shitting in a suitcase and dying. Hashtag spoiler alert for season one.
I have recommended to some people they can watch season two without having watched season one. So, but yeah, anything else on Valentina and Isabella and Rocco? Didn't see much of Rocco this episode, but I'm hoping we'll get more of him later.
Just as Giuseppe's being taken out, Valentina's given the old think good thoughts, you're coming back, please come back. And then, as we said, we have this where Mia tries her luck and Valentina's like, no, are you mad? Go away. What makes you think you're going to do that job?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mia might think she can become the piano player if she has sex with Giuseppe, but really, Valentina surely is the one that makes the final call on that.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's an interesting route for Mia to go down, as it were.
Scissor sisters.
Starfishing.
That's what they call it now, right?
Sorry.
So Daphne and Cameron, and Cameron wakes up with the girls, right? And Harper's calling Ethan. She asks, what did you guys do? Now, Ethan, throughout this episode, lies by omission, right? She never actually directly asks the question. So he's never really telling a direct lie. He's just not telling her everything.
Oh, I found Ethan infuriating in this episode, in a good way. But he had so many opportunities. And obviously for the drama, it's good that he didn't. But oh God, I just really wanted to just shake him.
Yeah, so I was trying to work out what was his motivation for not saying anything, even after Harper says they cheat on each other. I was thinking, why the hell has he not gone, oh, well, actually, do you know what? I felt uncomfortable saying this, but there's a whole mad night. I don't know, is it because he kissed Mia and that's where he's like, oh, that's maybe where I've gone wrong and I don't want to talk about that, but in burying the lead, he's got himself in this absolutely unnecessarily ridiculous situation because deep down, he doesn't give a fuck about the bro code or Cameron.
I think Cameron has been really clever in making Ethan feel as guilty as Cameron should feel. And so I think he's just played Ethan really well. And so even though Ethan didn't do anything as bad as Cameron, it's almost like maybe because Cameron is so doesn't feel any guilt at all about it, maybe Ethan's like doubling down on his guilt. I think the bro code is just manipulation, isn't it?
Well, he lies for the first time before Cameron's put the bro code down. But Ethan's agreement to abide by the bro code leads Cameron to tell him he loves him and he just wants to be inside him.
God, yeah, that was a bit of a moment, wasn't it? Also, yeah. I think, the other thing to mention is that Harper, the first thing she says to Ethan on the phone is, you never sleep this late. She's already half decided, following the conversation with Daphne, that something's happened. So he's already under the microscope from the minute that they start talking.
Yeah, she also says in that conversation, I tried calling you, and then later on she says, you sound weird. And I was like, oh, man, Ethan, just fucking say it, bro. That's the bro code. Fucking say it.
Well, the interesting thing is that Daphne has her own version of the bro code and that she asks Harper not to tell anyone about their conversation. Can she trust her? And Harper says, for sure. And then Daphne points out that you don't know anybody anyway, so it's fine. But one of the first things that Harper does when she sees Ethan is to break that cis code, if you like, by telling her everything that Daphne told her. So he's kept his side of the code, but she's instantly broken it, right?
Yeah, but I think also that whole thing about the girl code is that she says, you know, I can trust you. And we get this moment where she kind of doesn't say anything, kind of awkwardly tenses, maybe there's another wrinkle of the nose, and then says, oh, yeah, no, obviously, yeah, you can totally trust me. I mean, she is just unbelievable this episode. What she does with so little is just, oof, every moment as she finds herself traveling that path, every step she takes further and further down that route, you can just feel that your stomach drop, your chest tighten. Oh my God, she's just absolutely brilliant in this episode.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I think the first bit when she sits down and she's telling Ethan about what Daphne told her, it feels like it's relief. That's the kind of the emotion that's coming through, because she says, we're fine, you know, compared to them, we're fine. And I thought it was such an interesting line that we're fine, well, compared to them, who are obviously awful. It's just like, but she seemed really almost like kind of high from it and happy. And then, you know, an absolute expert shift to the obviously the big moment of the episode where she finds the condom. What Aubrey Plaza did that minute and a half was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, the moment she comes and sits down, and she sits down on the sofa exactly where it happens, and you see he's not looking at her come in, he's kind of looking out the window, and then she sits down and you see like this moment in Ethan's eyes where he's like, oh God, she's sitting where it happened.
Also, Damo, I thought for a moment that she was going to find the bra. It was as bad, let's be honest.
Yeah, and interestingly, she hides it in her handbag, right? I mean, we later see them at the beach club, I think, and the boys are talking about how rough they feel. And Daphne says she did some damage and has the receipts to prove it. So I did wonder whether Cameron's need for Ethan's investment is because Daphne's just spending all his money.
Not to circle back too much, but just before we get to this lunch, after she's put the condom in the bag, we get a shot of a painting of a semi-naked woman being basically frightened by a man like looming over her. And then we get the sea moment that's churning. And then the seagulls and the sea and the sky sort of meld into one. And it just was like so brilliantly unsettling in the best way that White Lotus is. And then Harper's silence at lunch, as we've just been saying, it's just hanging in the air, isn't it?
Yeah, they're talking about barreled saunas and hyperbaric chambers, and she just is totally like disgusted and preoccupied, I guess.
Yeah, she's not present at all, and she just very quietly gets up, walks off. The conversation doesn't stop, no one stops, and then eventually Daphne looks over and sees that she's not there, and she walks. I think we then get another shot of the churning water, I think, as you said. And then she stands on the edge of that pontoon. And I was like, is she going to dive in? Is this the fake out that she's going to be one of the bodies in the water?
Her walking to the end of that pontoon or jetty, it felt like she was reaching the end. You know, it was the end of a road, in that she walked all the way to the end of the jetty. And then she had this vast open sea in front of her, right? So this kind of sea of uncertainty. Yeah, it was really lovely, really lovely stuff.
I was just saying, did you spot Cameron's look at her before she left the table? I thought he looked a little bit pleased with himself.
There's a smug condescendingness, I think, condescension coming from Cam.
Yeah, he knows something's up. He's savvy enough to be aware that something is up, that she's not being herself. It's a different kind of quiet. She's almost ashen, isn't she? Ethan calls her a zombie. So there's not like a kind of quietness behind a mask, you know, not so silently judging him. This is someone who's rocked to their very core.
Yeah. I mean, she tries again to interrogate Ethan, and again, he lies by omission. And then at dinner, we get another great Cam shirt, and there's a conversation about baby weight being a bitch.
Yeah, but before that, we get that classic, you know, we've talked this before. She talks about it, especially, and we have talked about this, I think, in the first episode of that. Oh, my God, I love your outfit. Oh, thanks. Oh, my God. Like, and then the reaction to that. So it's like, oh, my God, I love your outfit. And then, of course, you can't just be like, yeah, thank you. It's a nice outfit. There has to then be a self-deprecating comment. And here we have it. She's like, oh, God, I couldn't even wear this 2 weeks ago. God, I was so fat, baby fat, 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 fat. Just the way that works and the way Ethan clocks it and goes, shit, if Harper's doing this, I know something is definitely up, because that is not how she behaves.
Yeah, within our little moments of protectiveness between women, we've also got these little moments of microaggression that happened all the time. It's just so good, this series.
We get another short scene where Daphne tells a story about a 10K run she did for charity and a guy who had a heart attack and died. This is just after Giuseppe's collapsed. But yeah, sort of, again, we're coming back to death and dying. And then at the end, we see Cameron tells Daphne not to leave him again. And Harper again asks Ethan. And this is where he tells her that Cameron asked him to invest.
But not only that, right? The condom wrapper has come out of the purse, the toiletry bag, and is now laid out flat on the side so that when Ethan goes in there, he's going to see it and he's going to know. And then that's how she's dealing with the conversation. She can't bring herself to ask him outright. It's too painful. So she has to put that there in the hope when he sees it, because he will see it and she'll make sure that he sees it next, that the conversation has to be had. And I don't think she's going to believe him.
Well, she's given him 3 or 4 opportunities throughout the episode. So I think she feels like it's her only option, right, to get this out in the open. Grand, any thoughts on them, on Duff Cam and Ethan Harper going forward? I mean, it's going to be fireworks, I'm sure.
The ease at which Cameron lied to Daphne's face when they were in bed office, the ease at which he did that was almost sociopathic, I thought. Yeah, and like you said, so he said, never leave me again. He's got his arm around her, but it's kind of pretty much around her neck, holding her tight to him. I can see something going horribly wrong there. I mean, obviously we know Daph survives, but I can see Cam going.
Well, we haven't talked about Dom and Bert very much in this. We've touched on them a little bit.
As much as Lucia has.
Yeah. there's another attempt by Dom to get Albie to intervene in his marriage woes. Albie tells him you can't buy people off. Bert offers to talk to her again. And he says the only person she'll listen to is Albie. And that kind of forces Albie to move away from the tables. He's digging his heels in and he's not going to help his dad out. One of my favourite moments, definitely this was a laugh out loud moment for me. Bert's asking the waitress at the beach club, on the menu, what are these numbers next to it? Are these the prices? And Dom's like, why are you looking at the prices? You're not paying for anything. And then Bert says, get me 3 of everything. So good. We get Bert's jealous of Albie. He may never see a naked woman again. Although he's got an interesting story to tell Dom about recently, earlier on today, he saw some breastage. And so now Dom is jealous.
He says, I saw a half-naked woman in my room. I guess that's one for the wank bank. But Bert, right, for his one a day to keep the doctor away.
Well, they're not sunsets, are they? But I sort of loved Bert sort of being on the periphery and starting to piece everything together. Like, oh, there were the girls that were coming out of your room. They were in my room. And it was just so, I think he's going to start to jigsaw everything together brilliantly and probably hold all that knowledge and that power until he can play it really well. But I only, you know what, because all these storylines have been kind of sort of webbing together, I literally only clock towards the end of the series that obviously now Albie has had a blowjob of a woman who has had sex with his dad. Ooh.
Do we think there is going to be any father-son sharing action going on at any point?
A Sicilian finger trap. No, I don't think. The reaction from Grace. No, I don't think that will happen. Well, I think there might be some cross-contamination, but I don't think it will be at the same time. That would be truly weird.
The last thing we see of Dom is him being bored with the porn that he's watching on his laptop. So he's clearly, do we think, going to be looking for some more action at some point. He's got 4 more days, right? 3 more days.
Yeah, I this is just a tiny thing, but I think of all of the characters so far, I do think Dom is probably most underused, or I don't really see how much he's impacting everybody else in the same way that the others are.
I think he's a grower, not a shower, shall we say, when it comes to narrative.
Thanks for the context there.
And he's the most egocentric, isn't he, almost, of all of them. So in a way, that him not engaging with anyone else isn't too much of a big surprise. But yeah, I wonder whether Isabella, that he's had some interaction with Isabella, so whether that's something that's going to crop up, and maybe Valentina's the one who in a fit of jealous rage.
That is a triangle I'm interested in. Not Valentina's triangle, sorry. I meant the love triangle of Valentina, Isabella and Dom.
I mean, yeah, Valentina's got Dom marked, hasn't she?
Big time.
I think that's something that will play out for sure. I hope so.
Excellent. What else have you guys been watching?
I'm afraid nothing from me. I haven't really had much time to watch any telly, so I'm afraid nothing. What about you, Damo?
So, as I said in the Walking Dead episode, do check that out. I know Grace is a big fan. And there's a thing called the World Cup, which is completely taking over my life for the next couple of weeks. And I also touched on briefly and teased to this episode that I've been watching the new drama on Netflix, 1899. And you've watched a little bit as well, right, Adam?
Yeah, I'm two episodes in.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
What are you making of it?
Yeah, I like it. My only issue is I think the lead actress is in a different show to everyone else. Other than that, I really like it. It does suffer a little bit from the, why don't you just fucking tell the other person the information that you know? There seems to be no reason why you're not sharing this information other than to long out the story for another episode and a half. It suffers a little bit from that. But other than that, I think it's good. I think it's a really good ensemble. I think some of the German and Danish actors and actresses are brilliant.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm finding some of it hard to get my head around and kind of where it's a lot of setup in that first two episodes. And there are a lot of characters, but it's a really, really good concept, I think. And there's definitely enough intrigue to keep me watching. So yeah, definitely enjoying that one. Anything else that you've been watching, Damo?
No, that's it. Like I said, the World Cup. I mean, you guys are lucky I've sat out yet another game to record. Such is my love of this podcast, you beautiful people and our amazing listeners.
I have watched the first two episodes of The Santa Clauses. I have watched this with my kids. So I wanted to just share with you a review from Phoebe and Otis.
Okay, so what did you think of Santa Clauses, Otis?
Good.
You thought it was good?
Yes.
What did you like about it?
It was just good.
It was just good. Did you like it, Phoebe?
Yeah, I think it's a good series for family members to watch.
Yeah, because we watched it together.
Yeah.
What was your favourite bit?
When they fainted.
They fainted?
Yeah.
Well, the elves fainted. Why did the elves faint?
No, not the elves.
Who fainted?
The humans, remember? Because one of the elves sprinkled the red things and then they fainted.
Yeah. So when the elf sprinkled the red dust on them.
I like seeing Santa get confused about why he was losing weight and then wanting to get fatter.
Yeah, it's funny, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There we go. Magical, funny Santa Clauses, as reviewed by the Hemmings.
Reviewed by the Hemmings. Reviewed by the Hemmings.
I'd say that's probably the most insightful bit of TV description of the whole episode.
I'd say the whole podcast ever.
It is quite good fun. Tim Allen's very good in it. You've got Elizabeth Mitchell from Lost as well as Mrs. Claus. There's some funny adult humour in there. Santa is losing his magic and Mrs. Claus says, well, you know, it happens, men of your age.
Maybe they need to go and look in Lucia's handbag.
Yeah. But Matilda Lawler, who's brilliant in Station 11, she plays one of the elves. She's really good. I think she plays an elf called Crouton. So yeah, enjoying the Santa Clauses, and we'll be watching that weekly with the kids. Yeah, I'm still watching loads of other stuff. So I'm still watching The Crown, Mammals, The English, and Tell Me Lies. I've watched a couple of episodes of Tell Me Lies, which is on Disney Plus, which is the kind of YA horrible people show. And I kind of just put that on the back burner because it wasn't that gripping. Very well made. They're all very, very good in it. Grace Van Patten, who was in Nine Perfect Strangers, particularly, is very good. There's a couple of shows coming up this week, tomorrow, in fact, that I wanted to mention. The first one is Echo 3, which comes out on Apple TV. When scientist Amber Chesbra goes missing along the Colombia-Venezuela border, her brother Bambi and her husband Prince struggle to find her against the backdrop of a secret war. It stars Luke Evans, also from Nine Perfect Strangers, and Michael Huisman from Game of Thrones and The Flight Attendant. So I'm going to be checking that out because it sounds like another great Apple TV show.
He was also in Game of Thrones.
I said that.
Sorry, I've been up since 5. Carry on.
Dario Naharis, wasn't he, in Game of Thrones? And the other one also out on Wednesday is Wednesday on Netflix. This is directed by Tim Burton. This is following the teenage Wednesday Addams from Addams Family fame as she navigates high school whilst trying to master her psychic powers and stop a monstrous killing spree of the town's citizens. Jenna Ortega plays Wednesday, Catherine Zeta-Jones plays Morticia Adams, and Louise Guzman is playing Gomez Adams. What did Craig David do on Wednesday, Damo?
He met his girl on Monday, took her for a drink on Tuesday. They were making love by Wednesday, but that then carried on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but thankfully they chilled on Sunday.
Sorry, listeners, Damo's face when Adam asked him what Craig David was doing on Wednesday, that he got asked that in the podcast. The little moment of joy and panic, bit of panic.
Maybe Craig David will make a cameo, as does Christina Ricci, who played Wednesday Adams in the 1991 film. And also Gwendolyn Christie is in the show. So I'm definitely going to be checking this one out. I think it's got a lot of promise.
Gwendolyn Christie was in Game of Thrones?
She was, yeah. And The Sandman. The other thing that I've been watching, as you all know, is the really, really brilliant, possibly best show of the year, Andor, which finishes also tomorrow.
Andor what?
I also listened to the Smartless podcast with Jason Bateman and company, and they made exactly the same joke, but they then changed it to no but.
Andor no but?
Andor no but was the alternative title of the show. It should be no but.
But that doesn't work. And isn't the opposite of no.
That's not as funny.
Anyway, I just wanted to point out that they'd stole our joke. They must listen to our podcast. They stole our joke and then just made it something different just to try and hide it.
Different and worse.
We're on to you, Bateman, Arnett and other guy.
Yeah, I mean, feel free, lads, just to let us know that we're right. You can contact us at TVDNAPod. Yeah, that's right. I went there on Twitter and Instagram. You can put TVDNA in the Facebook search bar or just put it in Google or something like that. Just put TVDNA. It's 2022. We're almost, you know, at the end of 2022. We know how to use a search engine, don't we? Subscribe, like, tell us how much you enjoy it. Preferably a 5-star review because it helps us so much. And we love you.
And check out our episodes on Bad Sisters and The Walking Dead as well. Loads of great content. 3 more episodes coming out this week. Who's got a sign-off for the White Lotus?
Well, I'm off to find a terribly well-hung Italian stud and have a really big party at the villa.
So this is an aside. Just because he is such a fucking Love Island character and he's been spending all this time at the villa.
Oh my God, I hope he gets a text at one
point. I mean, I literally know nothing else about the show other than that he might get his head turned. As Cam said to Ethan, and Lucia probably should have said to Albie, you coming, big guy?
I feel like if I won the lottery ticket, I'd be Bob.
I just got your internet is unstable. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Hear me now.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Do I need to get back on that? Are we good?
Yeah, go back on. He's been here for about 2 months or whatever you said. And it's 2 months, not 4. FYI, correct, please, over here.
Thanks, Chris.
Oh.